Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 85.
And it's no longer Halloween.
It's time to take down all the spooky decorations and put up all of your Thanksgiving ones.
Carrie's one of those people who celebrates Thanksgiving.
It's not so much celebrate. I just love fall. Fall is like, well, like New England fall. That's my heaven.
Yeah.
South Mississippi fall is basically summer with a couple of cold days. But I just love the colors and the, you know, like the sweaters and the fire pits and the, you know what I mean? I just fucking love it. And I got some new decorations at Joann's for 80% off, so I'm ready to put them up.
True that, true that. We hope y'all had a happy Halloween. We hope you enjoyed the 31 nights of Halloween.
We sure as hell did.
Yeah, we really did. And we did some fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and we talked to Liz motherfucking Sauer.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't even know what to say about it because it was that good.
I had Lady Wood. Liz, if you're listening to this, I'm so sorry.
Inappropriate party of one.
Huh. Well, we have more guests on this inappropriate party. Patreoners!
Absolutely. So, welcome Lacey from Texas.
Angie from Ohio.
Kim A. from Illinois.
Selena H. from Texas.
Anything for Selena's.
Perfect.
Melissa B. from California.
And Megan C. from Virginia.
Thank y'all so much for joining Patreon.
Disclaimer. If you join Patreon during the month of October and right before it, we sent out thank you letters and they all came back. So I had to go up to the post office and be like, got these stacks of like really Lisa Franked out shit, but like creepy shit on there. And I'm like, what do I need to do? So they're being resent with extra postage. Whatever.
Yeah. So if you haven't gotten your letter and you're like, I joined 3 weeks ago. The mail's not that slow. Where's my letter?
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
We are so sorry. And hopefully the stickers and the goodies make up for it.
Absolutely. And if you want a letter that's 6 weeks late
mm-hmm.
or you want to have your name shout out on an episode or any of the extra content that they get on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast.
Well, and I will say that we recorded something earlier in this intro that we're taking out, and it's called an extra slice. And everyone who is on Patreon, like the dollar up, get it. And it's juicy. But I will say most of the extra slices are inappropriate.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's why they get cut. And
then we just share with y'all.
Yeah. So maybe you don't want to be in the Creepinati, but we want you to.
You hear all of our shit.
Literally.
Another perk of Patreon is that you can be in a Snapchat group with us. Well, on Snapchat. And in the group, Meg recommended this murder to us. Well, to me. And then she told you something to do, too. But anyway. And it's called the Little Miss Murder.
Okay.
And I was like, what's this about? Okay. So I started doing a little digging, and that's what we're going to do today.
Perfect. And it would have been even better had I done what she had recommended for me, but ruin that. Womp womp.
Okay. Picture it. 1988. And 18-year-old Lisa Marie Kimmel who also went by the nickname Little Miss that her grandma had given her, had been working in Denver, Colorado. Well, she and her mother were both working in Denver, Colorado, but her family was still in Billings, Montana. And so she was like, her and her mom were going to go back home for a little bit just to see everybody. But her mom and her decided that they were going to travel separately going back home because Lisa Marie wanted to stop off in Cody, Wyoming so that she could pick up her boyfriend, Ed, because she and Ed were doing so great and she wanted to introduce him to her family.
Oh, shit.
So Lisa Marie and her mom, because again, it's 1988, there was no Waze back then. So you had to actually have a map. And so she and her mom sat down because again, remember, Lisa's 18 years old. You know, she's a baby. And so when it comes to traveling by herself, I mean, yeah. I think back to when I was 18 and starting to travel and you know what I mean? It's like, you need guidance. So they sat down with the roadmaps. They plotted out where she was going to go. So her mom knew like her exact route because she helped her plan it. And Lisa Marie took her mom to the airport. They hugged each other, said goodbye. And that was the last time her mom saw Lisa Marie.
Oh, gosh.
So she had a very distinct car. She was a very independent person. And she went out and bought this car by herself. She didn't have anybody co-sign with her. She didn't have to borrow money from anybody. She did the damn thing. And she got her a 1988 Honda CRX, which is like a, it was black. And it was, it's one of those like sporty cars, you know. And remember, we're also in 1988. So it was like a brand new car. Yeah. Like she, like I said, she did the damn thing. And she had a personal license plate on it, that like a vanity plate that said Little Miss. Because again, that was a nickname that her grandma had given her. So her boyfriend Ed's house was basically her halfway point to get home. So she was going to stop there. They were going to spend the night and then they were going to do the last leg of the trip together. Well, she should have been getting to Ed's house on Friday night. Well, the next morning, she wasn't there, and so he called some highway patrol. He called her parents to be like, where the fuck is she, you know? Well, but here's the thing, too, though, is that they don't know where she is, and so they don't know who to call, you know? So they call the highway patrol because that's, you know, where they can cover everything because they don't know what city or town or anything she's in, what county to call sheriff or a police department or what. And they're told that she has to have been missing for 72 hours for them to report her missing and for them to do anything about it.
But the first 48 is like the most important.
But it's 1988 and she's 18 years old. And so it's not, I mean, you know, think about when did the Amber Alert start? That was like early 2000s, I think. And so it's like, she's an 18-year-old girl. She can go missing if she wants to. You know, legally, she's an adult. She can do whatever she wants. And so it's like, well, you know.
Yeah.
So her parents start doing everything that they can do to find her. Her dad drives up and down because there's really three different ways that she could have taken once she hit, I think it was Casper, Wyoming. And so her dad was driving up and down these highways, seeing if he could spot her car. Again, she had a very distinct car, you know, seeing if they could spot her car, seeing if they could find anything, asking people along the way. Her dad even chartered a helicopter to drive over it to see if they could find her, see her car, see something to lead them to her. Well, they also took it to the media and they were like, look, she's missing. The police can't do anything because she's not missing. She hasn't been missing for 72 hours, blah, 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 blah. Well, once the news breaks, they get a tip that she had actually been stopped by a highway patrol officer like 60 miles south of Casper around 9 o'clock at night on Friday night for speeding. And it's pretty crazy because there's like audio recording of her getting pulled over. And because I watched an episode of On the Case with Paula Zahn on this, and then there's an Unsolved Mysteries wiki that I used, and then Wikipedia because that's the best. But those are top three things that I used for my research on this. Well, they actually played some of it from On the Case with Paula Zahn, and she just was so soft-spoken. And, okay, so state law in Wyoming is that back then, I don't know if it's still the same thing, but if you are from out of state and you get a ticket, you have to pay the ticket like right then, like to the officer, because they don't want you to leave and not come back and pay your fine. So on the little recording, she's like asking how much it is, and it's like $120, and she doesn't have that much cash. But then I'm like, damn, that can lead to some shady shit, though. If you're paying these officers cash for your fines, like, I'm sure that there are, like, 99% of the officers aren't shady as shit and taking your cash and never writing, you know, like, never writing the ticket. But you know that there are some that they're a little short on cash that week. They don't actually write you the ticket, but they just take your cash. So when I was watching that, I was like, oh, that's shady. That's shady as shit. Anyway, So if you can't pay the ticket, they're supposed to take you to jail. And so on the little recording, he was like, I really should be taking you to jail right now, but I'm going to let you go with this warning, you know, and then you pay the ticket like when you get home kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And she gave her dad's address. Like, she had all intentions of paying it. But also I'm like, okay, if her ticket was $120 and she didn't have that money, like, you're going to take her last little bit of money. How's she supposed to get gas and stuff like that down the road if she needs it? So she gets back in her car and goes on her way. And they interviewed that police officer, and they were like, he said that he just could not take this like sweet, innocent girl to jail, because he was like, I just felt so sorry for her. I could not take her to jail. I just had to let her go and let her pay it. So the last time she was seen, for sure, was about 60 miles south of Casper at 9 o'clock on Friday night. Well, about a week later, this was April 2nd of 1988. Well, there was a mechanic. His name was Greg Bradford. Doesn't really matter. But this poor guy was just walking along a river in Casper, Wyoming, the North Platte River, and he sees a partially nude body in the water. And it was Lisa Marie's body.
Bless it.
Well, it was, again, Wyoming. It's only in April, so it's still cold. There weren't a lot of signs of decomposition. And so the autopsy was pretty, they were able to get a lot of information from it. And so now they have a location. You know, they know that her body was found in Casper. They know that the last time she was seen was about 60 miles from Casper, you know, when she got pulled over. So they're kind of starting to get a timeline. The police are starting to, you know, search, because now they know, okay, this is where her body was found. So they go upstream to see where she may have entered the water. And there was a bridge about a quarter mile away, and that bridge had a lot of Lisa's blood. And so the police are like, okay, this is not a very common bridge. It's not easily accessible. Most people don't use it. So they're like, whoever did it is probably a local. People who lived along the bridge said that they had seen a car there early on Saturday morning of March 26th. And she, you know, the last time she had been seen was March 25th. But the police are still like, but where's her car? You know, like, they don't know really and truly from where she went missing, because they can't find her car, you know? So it could have been, she could have gone missing 60 miles back and then they came and dumped her. You know, you don't know because there's just not a lot of evidence.
Yeah. God, that shit's so frustrating.
I know. Well, because it's like, because really it is. It's like, how do you solve these stranger on stranger murders that there's literally nothing to go on, especially in 1988?
When you said stranger on stranger crime, all I thought about was Israel Keyes.
Yes.
And it's like, that really is so scary. And that's what made him so scary.
Because especially with him, how he left like the kill kits and stuff in other places, because it's just so fucking random.
Yeah.
It's just wherever the wind takes him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and even like on SVU or Criminal Minds or any of that, I know you hate it, but like, I try to figure out who the killer is and all of this, and it pisses me off when it is some third, like, he was a character that was walking behind the scenes in one thing. And I'm like, why? That's so random. And there was no like context clues or any of that, but that's real life. That
right. It's just so random.
Yeah. And it doesn't always have ties back to whatever, you know, like, I'm like, oh no, it was a dad because, you know, like he looked at her this way and then he said these words and then, you know, right. like, all of that.
It's not Murder, She Wrote. It's real life.
Yeah.
I mean, because sometimes she gets me too. But usually, you can figure it out because you're like, oh, such and such talked to such and such this certain way. And they said this one thing that stuck out. But it's not, it doesn't wrap up in a bow like that. Some stuff calls her Lisa. Some stuff calls her Lisa Marie. So forgive me if I bounce back and forth. But because her body was found in the North Platte River, her case went to the Natrona County Sheriff's Department in Wyoming.
All I can think about is Longmire. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, break me off a piece of that sexy older man.
Well, this sheriff is nothing like him. So the sheriff for Natrona County, his name was Ron Ketchum.
And did he catch him usually?
Mm-mm. And you know, this was like the biggest murder case they had ever had. So this case is taking priority, right? It is like a small sheriff's department. They've got two detectives working around the clock on it. And they're literally putting everything they have into figuring this case out. Well, they just don't have the resources or the manpower to be able to solve this on their own. So what happens usually in a smaller town when there's a big murder case? They bring in the government. They bring in the federal government or they bring in the state investigators so that they can use these bigger resources. The assistant attorney general of Wyoming was like, hey, you need to bring in the feds. Let them help you. The Kimmels, her family, they were asking, please bring in help. Like, y'all need help to solve this. The lead detectives were like, we need help to solve this. But old Sheriff Ketchum was like, nope, not going to do it. This is our case.
Fuck you, dude. Fuck you.
Fuck you and you, you know, like wanting to win a fucking pissing contest with the federal fucking government so that you get what? So you get credit for all this? I don't know. But either way, like, come on. So a battle ensues. Her parents are like, let them come in and help. You need the help. And the sheriff is like, if you keep pursuing this, I'm going to arrest you for obstruction. I'm going to put you in jail. Lisa Marie is the victim, not you. Back off.
Whoa.
Are you seriously going to tell a victim's family?
Whoa.
You're not the victims? Are you fucking kidding me? You're going to threaten to put them in jail because they want you to get help? Well, eventually, the Kimmels won. And in July of 1989... a full 15 months after she had gone missing, finally, an investigator from the ATF, which is the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, it's a federal agency in the States, one of their investigators, one of their agents, was able to come in and help. And on the episode of On the Case of Paula Zahn, Don Flickinger is his name, and he talks a lot about how, you know, the lead investigators were very welcoming to him. Like, they got along great. They were supportive of one another. But that he had called the sheriff, like, multiple times to reach out and be like, look, I'm here to help. I'm here to offer resources. I am not trying to take your case over. Just use me as a resource. And the sheriff never called him back.
What a fucking bastard.
I know. Well, the ATF agent, Don, you know, he's looking at the autopsy results and all of that, and it showed that she had been severely beaten. She had been restrained and raped repeatedly before she was hit over the head and stabbed 6 times. And based on the blood on the bridge, she was killed on that bridge. And they say, according to the autopsy, the blunt force trauma was enough to kill her. Like, the stabbing was just overkill. The autopsy also showed that they believed that she had been kept for at least 6 days.
I mean, what else could have happened?
I mean, Like, well, a lot. I watch Criminal Minds.
True. But it's like she had the whole fucking kitchen sink thrown at her. You know what I mean? I know. Like, everything. What?
Well, and two, the restraints that were used weren't on her. They had been taken off when her body was dumped. So, you know, the ATF agent is like, well, that was smart. So this is clearly a little more organized and a little, you know, like it's not as frenzied as you might think from that kind of stranger killing.
Yeah, it was more methodical.
Exactly. One thing that the ATF agent did was he was like, okay, wait, there's some like DNA on her from the rape and all. Let's keep that and let's start taking some blood samples, which I felt like was pretty ahead of the times for what he, because this was like, you know, 1989, 1990. Like when I was watching that, I was like, was DNA already a thing then? But I guess, I mean, that's the perk of bringing in fucking the ATF. They have technology that this small sheriff's department wouldn't have had. So they actually like called him the vampire because he got blood from so many people to compare it to. And so, of course, the first person they check is her boyfriend, and he's not a match. And then they start checking everybody. They even get DNA from the police officer that had stopped her before, because let's rule him out. Like, he's the last one to see her alive. But then it was weird that he let her, not weird, but it was like, he even said in the recording, like, this is very unusual that I'm letting you go. You should be going to jail right now. Slow your ass down, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they got his DNA. He was cleared. You know, they're just getting DNA from everyone who is a potential suspect. So they're investigating, all these different leads, taking them to all these different states because it's like, oh, we spotted her car here or there, all the things. They finally called a break. Her parents had been on the news, and right after it aired, they got a call from a witness that said on the night of March 25th, they had seen a small black car with a woman that was driving it, was pulled over on the side of the road, and she was pulled over by a Natrona sheriff's car. And the witness said that in the car, they recognized that it was Sheriff Ketchum that had her pulled over.
Caught him.
Plot twist. So you mean to tell me that the guy who didn't want to bring in the fucking feds to help solve this case pulled her fucking over? So the ATF agent, of course, is like, skirt, you said what? And so they ask Ketchum about it, and he's like, I didn't even work that night. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Well, they do some digging on some call logs and stuff, and he, in fact, was working that night.
Wow.
And so they're like, you weren't working that night, you said, but here's call logs from dispatch that you were working, and we have an eyewitness that puts you pulling her over. This poor girl can't catch a break. She got pulled over fucking twice.
Oh my gosh. Was she listening to Taylor Swift? Because that's when I got pulled over. That damn All Too Well song, it gets me crunk.
That All Too Well song is like,
it wasn't All Too Well, I'll tell you that.
It's one of my favorites of hers by all time. Of all time.
For real. It wasn't when I was like, ooh. I mean, I was feeling it. Then my pocketbook. Who says pocketbook? But my purse strings. Who says that?
No one.
But my money was feeling it too. Good God, I don't know.
I mean, you could have said my wallet, but
who has a wallet?
My bank account.
Damn.
Okay, so the eyewitness said they even noticed like that her vanity plate said Lil Miss. So like it was fucking her. They confront the sheriff with this, with these allegations and with the fact, like, you said you weren't here, but you were, so what's up? And he flew off the fucking handle, refused to give blood for a DNA sample, refused to participate at all, was like, you're fucking off your rocker, I didn't do this, storm out, all the drama.
You don't look guilty at all, Ketchum.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that, you know, none of the law enforcement officers would really talk about it to like out in the open, but they would tell the ATF agent on the side, like, no, you should probably really look into him. Like, there's some other reports that he stopped women on like desolate country roads. There was even one woman who said that she moved out of the state because, again, she had gotten pulled over on this desolate country road. And then not long after that, Ketchum actually showed up at her house.
What?
In her, like, her new house in Missouri after she moved out of the state. So, mm-hmm. like, there's just, he's just a, not a good dude. Well, then he's refused to submit a blood sample, all the things. And we're hitting the 2-year anniversary of Lisa's disappearance. And guess what?
What? Chicken butt.
No. Ketchum attempts suicide.
What in the Ariel Castro is going on?
He tried to overdose on drugs, came back to work like 3 weeks later, was treated for depression and all that. And so they're just like, okay, the timing of this suicide is so fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he said he wasn't working when he was, we've got a witness saying he was the last one to see her. He wouldn't give us blood. He lost his shit, you know, but eventually he did finally submit a DNA test.
Oh, good.
And it wasn't him.
Skirt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Ketchum.
Yep.
Fuck.
And just kind of like a sad aside, in May of 2000, he actually did die by suicide.
Oh, gosh.
He drove out to this remote area in Casper and shot himself.
Mm.
Lisa's case was actually featured on Unsolved Mysteries just like a year after her body was found. And so the police are kind of like, where do we go to now? You know, we can't find her fucking car. That's the key to this. We've got to find her car. If we could find the car, we'd figure this out, right? They're just getting all these tips at this point that none of them are helpful because it's all these eyewitness, oh, I saw her car here, yeah. and here in this other state. And so they're just doing all this jet setting, checking out all these leads, and it's just burning resources, and they're not good leads. They even brought in two sisters that were psychics to the scene. And while they actually knew details of the crime that had never been released, there was nothing that they had that they could offer about help find, you know, finding who did it and all that stuff. But they did know things about her wounds and, you know, that kind of thing that had never been released. They did say that they had images of a rural setting, something about the number 2, and that they felt like something had been buried. Well, in the United States, federal agents have a mandatory retirement at age 65.
Mm.
So Flickinger, the ATF agent, had reached his mandatory retirement age. And so he retired. One of the lead investigators from the sheriff's department retired. And he was like, you know, he told the other investigator, he was like, before I die, I want you to come call me and tell me who did this.
Wow.
No fucking pressure. You couldn't figure it out, but...
Right. Yeah.
Well, in 2002, the states had really started putting in all of their DNA profiles into CODIS, which is here. It's the Combined DNA Index System. And so when someone is arrested for certain crimes, they automatically get their DNA swabbed and it gets put in CODIS so that if they've done a crime somewhere else, people can submit it. And then, you know, that's how they link all the stuff. Everyone who listens to true crime podcasts is like, thank you, Captain Obvious. But, you know, we could have some people here listening just because they like paranormal stuff. They may not be into true crime. So, well, okay, back to 2002. Wyoming is just really starting to submit some of their stuff to be for comparison. And Lisa's was one of the first DNA profiles that they submitted in from her case, the unknown DNA sample they had. When they ran it through CODIS, they got a fucking match.
Oh, fuck.
And it was to a guy by the name of Dale Wayne Eaton. He is 57 at the time, from Wyoming, and he was serving time in jail, well, in federal prison at Englewood, because he had been arrested on weapons charges. Well, his DNA profile had actually been in since 1997 because he had been arrested for, there was a family that was like stopped on the side of the road and he like pulled over to quote help them. The Breeden family was their name. He ended up kidnapping them at gunpoint.
What?
Yes. And once they, like, found him, he had the weapon, and so it elevated it to a federal crime, which is why his DNA was submitted. So Eaton lived on this huge piece of property that his grandfather had given him. And on the property, he lived in like basically a shack that was also attached to like a 1950s school bus. And that's where he lived. He had no fucking running water. So he would have to go like 20 miles to this rest stop to get water to bring it back to his house. Wow.
Not the life for me.
Absolutely not.
For me.
No. Filtered water is what I want and need. Because I am first world problems, a spoiled brat.
Same. I mean, Marley drinks filtered water.
Beau doesn't. I don't do.
Well, because her beard gets discolored.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing, too, is that his next door neighbors said that they had seen him digging like this huge hole on his property. And again, his property is only about an hour from where Lisa Marie Kimmel was last seen.
Wow.
So they have his DNA. They also have an inmate that says that he had confessed. In his confession to the inmate, he had said that she had offered to give him a ride. And when he tried to hook up with her and she was like, absolutely not, she pulled over and let him out. And then he kidnapped, raped, and murdered her.
Wow. Fuck you, dude. Fuck you.
Yeah. So the police get a search warrant for his house. And they notice a bunch of places that looked like the soil had been like unearthed and things had been buried. And so they start digging. And in one spot, about 6 or 8 feet down, they find her black Honda CRX still had the Little Miss license plate on it.
Oh my gosh.
How in the actual fuck did this man dig a hole big enough and deep enough and get that fucking car in there buried?
Well, you know, someone actually has a school bus out by my house that's buried, and that's their storm shelter.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know people that have like an 18-wheeler trailer buried, and that's their like storm shelter, apocalypse happening shelter. Mm-hmm. But how the fuck did this guy do it?
Right.
Like, he ain't got running water.
Yeah.
Does he have like a backhoe or some shit? Because literally all I picture him is out there with a shovel digging this fucking 8-foot hole. Like,
oh my God.
How did he do it? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Also, that reminds me of the opening credits of Fried Green Tomatoes when they find Frank Bennett's car.
Yes, and they pull it out. That's kind of what it looked like.
Oh, my God.
Legitimately kind of what it looked like. So he went to trial. He was charged with first-degree premeditated murder, aggravated kidnapping, aggravated robbery, first-degree sexual assault, and second-degree sexual assault. So what they think happened was the rest stop that he goes 20 miles to get his water, they think that that is where she stopped to maybe like look at her map, figure out, you know, where she was going. And while she's sitting at that rest stop, he comes up to her car, shit goes south, and he kills her.
And it's like she's doing exactly what she's supposed to do, like stop at a rest stop, not like just on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. And do you know what I mean?
I know. Ugh. So when he went to trial, you know, it's crazy because his defense team didn't deny basically that he killed her. They just said like, yeah, but he had a really bad childhood, so maybe not the death penalty. And so I think the trial lasted just over a week, and then the jury deliberated for 2 days. They ended up finding him guilty in 2004 and sentencing him to death. There was a couple of, like, appeals and back and forth, but as of right now, he is the only inmate on Wyoming's death row.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so her parents got, as part of, like, the restitution and stuff, her parents were awarded his fucking dwelling, for lack of a better word, because it's not a house, and his property. And what they did was they, like, donated the building to the local fire department so they could practice. Mm-hmm. And so they burned it all down. And they got to sit there and watch where their daughter was held captive in this disgusting no running water, no electricity, no nothing. Dirty. And, you know, and he was like a hoarder with stuff. He would buy like, you know, he just is exactly what you think of when you think of like a junky, desolate kind of house, you know?
Yeah.
And they got to watch it all burn to the fucking ground. And two more little things I want to talk about. One is that they were thinking that maybe he's actually a serial killer because it just was too good of a kill for it to be his first one.
Yeah.
You know, it was somebody random, found her potentially at the rest stop, you know, took her somewhere, kept her captive, and then took her to the bridge, killed her on the bridge, and, you know, dumped her body, but also didn't have, like, took the restraints and all that off of her that could be identifying factors on her, you know, yeah. like to help them forensically tie it to him.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of proof, but it is thought that maybe he's a serial killer. The other thing that I really, really love is that her parents, because Eaton had a sister and Lisa Marie's parents and his sister met and became friends.
Aww.
And they travel now, like, together talking about the families of people who have committed these horrific crimes and how they are victims as well, which, wow. you know, is like one of my big things.
Yeah.
That, you know, because his sister and her husband living their best life, like doing their thing. Who knew? You know, like they had no, they're not part of this and they shouldn't be treated the same way that he is just because they're related. Because right. they are victims too. Their lives are never the same either. Is it the same as a mom who lost her daughter? Absolutely not. But they're victims as well. And I think it's really cool that they do that together.
Yeah.
So that's the story of the Little Miss murder.
I am so glad this had an ending.
I know. Especially because, again, those stranger-on-stranger crimes are just so hard.
Yes.
And, you know, Lisa had two younger sisters. And one of the younger sisters said, I'm just so glad that he dumped her body and didn't bury her body in the car because we would have never found her.
That's so true.
Never, because if you think about it, truly, if he would have buried her with the car, they would have never gotten his DNA off of her body to run in CODIS to find him to even know what property to go search. They would have never found her.
Mm.
And, you know, it's crazy when you think of, like, how to get away with murder. It's like, dump all the identifying evidence, but, like, also not in the same spot, you know, because you don't yes. want to put her with her vehicle with her, you know, because it's like, idiot, he left, like, the VIN number and the car tag and all that on there, but he did do it in separate places, and he did get caught. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's really no perfect murder, because it's like, you know, he kind of spread the evidence out so you couldn't be like, jackpot, found all the evidence right here in this car, you know? But that's what led them to find the rest of the evidence. But in this case, had he buried it all, they probably would have never found her unless it came a fucking gully washer and, you know, washed off 8 feet of fucking dirt. That had never found her.
Wow.
I know. Such a good story. Like, you know what I mean by good.
Interesting and
intriguing and thought-provoking and
yeah,
but her parents just have really used this for, as you know, to be advocates and were advocates the whole time for her and looking for her and making that sheriff's department do what it was supposed to do in spite of its leadership, because all of the other investigators and deputies and all that were on their side. They were like, I don't know why the sheriff's doing this, you know? And then so it also just shows like how easily an investigation can be derailed because of one person, you know? So that's my story.
And you're sticking to it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Doing something a little different this week.
Oh, shit. I'm here for it.
Well, I'm like dipping my toes into your pond.
This bitch always up in my pond. Now all of a sudden she likes men in uniform. Now all of a sudden she likes big guys. Now all of a sudden she likes tall big guys. Now all of a sudden, just kidding. I mean, I'm not, but I am.
Okay, one, I've always been a badge bunny.
Yes.
Okay, is that not a uniform?
Yeah. Yes, but you dip in your toe in other uniforms. Get your toe out my pod. Nice. Get your little piggy out my pod. This little piggy gets out of Carrie's pod.
Oh, my God. This little piggy goes, wee, wee, wee.
All the way.
Well, I was going to the cop car, but what else? Wee, wee, wee. Thank you for getting where I was going.
That took me way too long. Everybody is like, Carrie. Oops.
Okay, picture it. January 2nd, 1935, Kansas City. And it was actually 1:20 p.m. to be exact. So there was this sharp-dressed man. He checks into a hotel in downtown Kansas City. And he's almost like an extra large pizza, but more stocky than anything. He had a cauliflower ear like boxers and MMA fighters get. And he had a large white horizontal scar on the left side of his head, which he can kind of cover with his hair and stuff. But so, I mean, like, he's obviously, well, not obviously, but he looks like he's a fighter or something.
Like a badass dude, a badass hunk of dude.
Exactly. Well, the hotel is the President Hotel.
Very shishy.
Mm-hmm. And he checked in under the name Roland T. Owen, and he gave Los Angeles as his hometown. Because this is 1935, so, like, it's so crazy to think about, like, how, you know, they would check in there and, like, sure, I'm sure they would have to send something back. And so his address was, what, you know what I mean? It's so,
and there's no way to check it. Like, right? You just have to take them at face value.
Yeah. He had absolutely no luggage. He asked for an interior room on a half floor of the hotel. Oddly specific. Or he just was, you know, scared of heights.
But he wanted a tall room.
Because usually they're, like, better. Because usually, like, suites are up higher and stuff. So maybe that was it. But he was like, I don't want to be by the window.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe he didn't want a window. Maybe he wanted to sleep really good and he wanted to be pitch black. Like, on a cruise, best fucking sleep.
True that. The hotel staff were like, he was a little odd. And then, like, no luggage and all of this. But he checked in for one day. So they're like, I mean, hey, you know what? We rent rooms for a lot of businessmen, a lot of travelers who stop in on their way to wherever they're going, and they want a little company that night. So, like, hey, you know what? Don't ask. Don't tell. You do you. Just, you know, pay and what else.
So maybe not that shishy of a hotel.
Yeah. Like, I mean, but it wasn't bad. I mean,
was it like a seedy hotel?
Yeah, it was downtown and stuff, but, like, and they didn't do it by the hour.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I mean, like, Richard Gere might have stayed there with Julia Roberts. So he gets to his room and it's 1046, so obviously on the 10th floor. And he was shown by the bellboy, which he had no luggage, but I guess, like, turn left here, turn right here, like,
maybe
whatever.
Maybe it was very shishy.
Maybe it was. Maybe, I don't know. But the bellboy said that Roland complained to him because he was like, you know what? I stayed at this other hotel one time and then they were trying to, like, charge me this outrageous amount. So I didn't stay there anymore. And, you know, like, all of this stuff, like, he was kind of complaining, like, he's been around this area for a little bit. And so he's like, cool, cool. Like, dude's a jackass, probably not going to tip me. You know what I mean?
And where's your fucking luggage? And why am I up here if you don't have any luggage?
Right. Well, bellboy shows him to his room. He watches Roland, and he has, like, an black overcoat on. He took out a black comb and toothpaste from his pockets.
I mean, he was just going to use his finger? What was he going to brush his teeth with? Just his finger and toothpaste?
You know, maybe.
You don't know.
Maybe. But, yeah, that was it. And so it's like, okay, you have no luggage and the most weird combination, like you said, of shit.
I mean, at least have a clean pair of underwear in your jacket or something.
Right? After he was shown his room, the bellboy was like, all right, peace. He's like, actually, I'm going to ride down with you on the elevator.
He's like, whew, now that I dropped off all my luggage. I'm going to come back down with you.
It was really weighing me down.
Ooh, that was so fucking heavy.
So then he leaves the hotel, and then, like, the hotel staff said, you know, they would see him at various times, very, like, sporadically, which I learned from what movie, Carrie?
Oh, Clueless.
Yes.
Hope not sporadically. R.I.P., girl.
R.I.P. Around 2 p.m., the hotel maid knocks on the door for room 1046.
So he's only been there an hour and he's just been bebopping all over the hotel?
No. I think that's because he actually stays longer than a day that he had originally planned. So I think that's just on his overall stay.
Gotcha. So an hour in, housekeeping's already coming by?
Well, because apparently, like, he wasn't supposed to be there. I think he was really supposed to be at that other one. And then they, like, dicked him around on the price. So he was like, fuck this shit, and just went here. But she was doing her afternoon rounds, and there was a lady that was staying in that room before.
Okay.
And so, like, she was going in, like, thinking it was the same person, too.
Okay.
And, nope, when she knocked on the door, it was a man's voice that told her to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that when she went inside, it was really just dim in there. There was only a light from a lamp that was on the writing desk. Which, it's so weird that, like, they still have, like, a writing desk and stuff in most hotels. But I guess because people are on business. What the fuck? I never go on business, so I don't know. I was like,
that's not weird.
No, it's not. And she said, like, the blinds were tightly drawn. And she was like, all right, this is kind of weird. Like, I guess because it's 2 in the afternoon and it's fucking, you know, looking like it's a seedy nightclub up in there where it's like all dim and whatevs.
Meanwhile, maybe he works a fucking night shift and he's sleeping. And that's why he wanted an interior room. And why's it got blinds if it's an interior room?
So what I think with this is, like, it's a courtyard view or something. You know what I mean? Like, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
Or where, you know, like, if it's an open square, like, there's no windows
To the outside.
Yeah. So she goes about her business, changing the used towels, doing all the things. And he again brought up the high price of that other hotel. And he just kind of, like, asking her about what she, like, what her work entailed. All, you know, like, just kind of weird. She just got a weird vibe from him, too, though. Like, I don't know. Awkward. And later she was interviewed and she said that he was either worried about something or afraid, and he always wanted to kind of keep in the dark. So then, after she left, she returned at 4 with clean towels. Like, so she, because at this time, I guess they just didn't have enough towels that she could, like, dirty up in here, clean now, you know? So it's like, gotta go down, wash them, bring them back up. I don't know.
That sounds terrible.
Cue Charlie's mom. Cheer up, Charlie.
Right? Oh, that's the worst song of the whole movie.
Worst song, and it grosses me out that that's how they wash their clothes. I don't know why. It's like I could smell the, like, detergent.
There are some jobs on this earth that I'm just so thankful that there are people that do them.
Yes.
And, I mean, there are people who can't do what I do, you know?
Yeah.
But that's what makes the world go round, Avi, that some people can do some things that other people can't. I mean, you have your strengths, but, like, this girl, I am not made to work outside.
Mm-mm.
My body revolts. I can remember being a kid and throwing up at softball practice because it was too hot. Like, I'm just not cut out for outside work.
Me either. So she returns back up to his room about 4 p.m. with the clean towels. And I did forget to tell you that when she was leaving, he's like, leave the door unlocked because I'm expecting someone later. Which, I mean, obviously at this time they didn't have a key card, but it was kind of like, you know, I think it was an I Survived I did where she was kidnapped and he, like, locked it from the outside and she could not get out internally. Do you remember that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So he told her, you know, leave the door unlocked. I'm expecting someone. And so she's like, aye, aye, Captain. So she goes back, you know, up there, knocks, but doesn't get an answer. Tries the door. It is unlocked. So she's like, you know what? I'm just going to go in there, put the fresh towels in, and be on my merry way. Like, don't have to answer his 20 questions again. But when she goes in, the room's dark like it was. However, Roland was asleep on the bed, fully clothed, but on the writing desk was a note. And like she said, it was, she could read it from the hallway light, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it said, "Dawn, I'll be back in 15 minutes. Wait." She's like, well, that's weird. But like, you know, I mean, cool. He might have just, he was expecting someone, whatever. I mean, it's not like he wrote that and then like went to sleep. He could have been whenever.
Right.
Well, the next morning, which is January the 4th, around 10:30, Mary, the housekeeper, she was like, all right, you know, going on her rounds like normal. When she reaches 10:46, she's like, oh, the doors are locked, you know, and she's now just used to it being open because he was so like adamant about leaving it open. So she is like, he must've checked out, you know, like whatever. Cool. She uses the pass key to get in and nope, he's there again in the dark, you know, like blinds, everything, but he's sitting by the phone inside. Like it sounds like something I would fucking do. You know what I mean? Be like, cause I'm creepy as fuck sometimes.
Yes, you are.
And I'm like, I'm just waiting for a phone call, you know, but like in my head, gotta be right here. Got to do this, like, not going to have the TV on because, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I get it. Look, I get it. My brain works weird, but it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So she goes in, she's cleaning the room, doing her stuff, goes to get the dirty towels, and just then the phone rings. So she hears Roland pick up, obviously, and he says, no, Dawn, I don't want to eat. I'm not hungry. I just had breakfast. No, I am not hungry. Is this not us? Well, I mean, we're always hungry, but that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's so, like, having to repeat yourself. Like, mm-hmm. No, I'm not hungry.
Meanwhile, though, I went straight to, what's that code for?
True. Well, after that exchange, Roland hung up the phone, and Mary's like, you know, even though that call was super short, like, tension was fucking there. Like, he, mm-hmm. like, Roland was not fucking hungry. He had breakfast.
Mm-hmm. Dawn was hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn could always fucking eat.
So, once she's done getting the dirty towels, cleaning his room, she's like, all right, peace till 4, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's 4 o'clock, so she comes, but she's like, She, like, puts her ear to the door because she's like, I hear more voices in there. And so she heard a second guy in there.
I bet it was Dawn.
Well, the world may never know.
Oh.
But she knocks on the door and a man, but she said he had a gruff voice, not like Roland's. And he's like, who is it? And so she's like, housekeeping, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, have fresh towels, you know, here to drop off. And the next thing she hears is, we don't need any.
Oh, well, this mother humpa, how you know?
Mm-hmm. But she's like, I know you need fresh towels because I picked them up today and you got none.
Son.
But she's like, okay, like, y'all do you. Okay, so we're going to leave them to do their business. But at 6 p.m. that evening, so 2 hours later, Jean Owen, who's not related to Roland, checked in and she had been shopping downtown. But it was like, you know, I mean, she's me. She was like nauseous and stuff. So she probably got over fucking heated and was like,
needed water, didn't eat enough.
Yes. So she's
or like, ate too much.
Like, I cannot drive home. So I'm just going to check into a hotel.
I love a fucking hotel.
Mm-hmm. Well, she got checked in at 10:48, so right next to Roland's room. At 6:50, she called her boyfriend Joe, so, you know, she had to go freshen up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's like, hey, look, I'm staying over at a hotel. Whatevs. So he came over about 9 o'clock, stayed for a few hours, and then left. So now it's like a serendipitous kind of moment. Maybe not serendipitous. Maybe it's like, did you ever see that movie Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow? Okay, never mind. But so Roland's checked in here with the mysterious guy who doesn't need towels. Jean checked in now with her boyfriend, everything. Well, he's leaving now. And while he's leaving, he kind of crossed paths, but, you know, like, we really don't know. But it's like same time, this guy, Robert Lane, was leaving work at the water department. Again, like 11 p.m., which, damn, son.
What water department is open at 11 p.m.?
I don't know. Maybe he's like maintenance.
Or maybe he was like, they were skimming some shit off the top. He was like a forensic accountant.
True, true.
Really digging through the books, working late, trying to figure out where the money went.
Well, you said skimming things off the top. I literally went to the gross thing where like they were like filtering out of the water shit.
This is not Flint, Michigan.
Well, apparently I thought so. And then I was like, oh, okay. Illegal shit. Okay, cool, cool. So he's leaving, going home, you know, like, whew, long day, blah, blah, blah. Well, when he pulled onto 13th Street, he said he noticed this man that was kind of like running along the sidewalk, but he wasn't dressed for the time. Like, it's like 33 degrees, you know, and he basically had on pajamas. So like shoes, an undershirt, and some like stretchy pants, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? Not like slacks or like wool stuff, because it's fucking cold.
Athleisure.
Yes. In 1935 version.
All I picture is those old school women's bathing suits that were like fucking like a romper.
Yes. When he got closer, the guy, you know, like kind of threw his hand out to be like, taxi. Well, Lane pulled over to be like, what's going on? Because he didn't know, like, he thought he was just flagging him down. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, shit, this guy's out here probably freezing to death. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
So he pulls over, and the man just gets into the back seat of his car. And so Robert's like, not a taxi, dude.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, shit, like, thought you were one, but can you take me to where the taxis are then? And Robert, being a good guy, he's like, yeah, 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 I'll do that for you. And so he did what we all hate. He's like, whew, you look like you have had it. You know, like, fuck you. But so he said, like, while he said that, and I'm like, you really are a taxi driver.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy he picked up, he's just kind of looking out the window, and he's like, I'm going to kill that expletive tomorrow. Like, just kind of mumbling it, like, I'm going to kill that motherfucker.
I was going to say, you can't say the word?
Well, the newspaper that, like, reported this incident, they, like, hyphenated it out.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, we don't know what he said.
Well, how many letters was it? Let's figure it out.
I don't know. Fuck.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't know if they were even like that. It might have just been, like, one hyphen. I don't know.
Mm. I'm like, now you don't cuss?
Robert drove him up to where the cabs are and stuff. He jumped out and was like, taxi, taxi. Mm-hmm. And like, basically just like that, he was gone, you know, like,
yeah,
okay, like fucking random, but whatevs. Well, cut back to the President Hotel, and again, it's like around 11, all of this is happening. And Jean is like, what the fuck is going on next door? She was later quoted as saying, I heard a lot of noise, which sounded like it was on the same floor and consisted largely of men and women talking very loudly and cursing. When the noise continued, I was about to call the desk, but decided not to. So sometime around 1 to 3, there's this lady who enters, and they all kind of know her because she is what they call a commercial lady.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, whatevs. But he takes her up to the 10th floor, and maybe the bellhop just has to do the elevator or something. I don't know why, you know, but like, So he takes her up and she's like, all right, in 1026, like, I'm going there. And so he shows her. And about 5 minutes later, he gets, like, I guess he's like ring, ring on the elevator. And so he has to go and work it, operate it, goes back up to the 10th floor. And she's like, that motherfucker wasn't there, you know? And it's not like the guy who she normally comes to see, because he's always on time and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bellhop's like, that's weird.
But she's going to 1026.
Yeah. And then she's like, well, maybe 1024. Like, maybe that was it. And there was a light on in there. So she kind of like lingered a little bit. But then the guy goes back up to get her. Because, you know, I mean, she's like, I mean, she's got to make her money. So, yeah. Like, she might be like me, and numbers are not her friend.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
True.
Mm-hmm.
So the bellhop gets back up there, and it's like, this lady again takes her down. She leaves. Well, about an hour later, she comes back with another man. They go up to the 9th floor, and like at 4:15, he goes up to the 9th floor to get her, and she leaves the hotel. Well, a little bit later, like, I mean, seriously, not long at all, that man that she was with, he had to go up to get him from the 9th floor, came down, and was like, I can't sleep. I'm going to go out for a while. Again, like, I feel like Richard Gere when he plays mm-hmm. the piano, you know? Mm-hmm. And so Charles is the, like, bellhop at this point. It's not the other one. He's like, you know, maybe the man was just, like, kind of embarrassed because, like, 1 and 1 equals 2. Like, mm-hmm. okay, sure. So he's like, maybe, like, he's just awkward and didn't want, you know, I mean, like, hey, you just had sex, eh? Mm-hmm. You know? So cut to the next morning. That is Friday the 4th at, like, 7 a.m. Delilah Ferguson, she is the switchboard manager. She's like, there is a fucking light blinking on the board, and it's 1046, so the phone's off the hook or something. And, like, cannot happen. Would totally be me. Like, go find that person. Like, yeah. My switchboard needs to be perfect. So she sent old Randolph, the original bellhop, back up there and was like, all right, replace the phone. Because, you know, like, why would it be off the hook? Why would it be blinking? Like, replace it. And while she was doing this, she double-checked and no calls had come in or out of 1046 that night before this. So it's like, why would it be off the hook, mm-hmm. you know?
It's not like they were getting all of these calls and were right. like, just take the phone off the hook.
Exactly.
Plus, if they have a switchboard, they could probably just be like, don't allow calls.
Exactly. He could be like, my name's Barney Rubble. Don't, you know, mm-hmm. if they don't say that, then don't come through.
Exactly, Notting Hill.
Thank you. When the bellhop gets up there to 1046, knocks on the door, and there's a do not disturb sign hung on the handle, but when he knocks, the voice says, come in. So he's like, okay. So he's turning it, and he's like, that's weird. It's locked from the outside, you know? So what's going on? Like, he can't, you know, get in.
He don't have the key?
Right.
Okay.
And he didn't get it.
Yeah, when he came
like, up. A pass key. Yeah, because, like, why would he, you know? Or, like, why would he not have a fucking pass key? Who knows? Like, maybe the blacksmith had to fucking make it and it wasn't a buy one, get one free.
What the fuck is a pass key?
Like a master key.
Like a skeleton key?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Pass key?
Well, that's what it is. These people called it.
Oh, okay.
So when he realizes, like, fuck, I can't get in because it's locked, he's like, well, shit. Well, about that time, he's like, let me knock again. Maybe he'll get up. Like, I don't know. He hears the voice say, turn the lights on. So he's like, what the fuck? Like, what? You know? And so kind of in a confused way, but then also, like, kind of like, I don't know what the fuck you doing over there, but boy, bye. He just kind of yells and is like, hey, can you put the phone back on the hook? Thank you. And he's like, you know, peace out. 8:30, Delilah is like, this bitch, what is going on? So she sends another bellhop up there, knocks on the door, and it's unlocked. And so he lets himself in, and there's Roland just starfished on the fucking bed, bare-ass naked.
What?
Mm-hmm. So the bellhop's like, all right, let me just kind of slink in here unnoticed and put the phone back on the hook. He suspected that Roland had been drinking, and that's why, like, mm-hmm. he was passed out like that or something, but we don't know that at all. So fast forward to 10:45, and Delilah is like, it's off the hook again in 10:46. So she sends the bellhop up there again. He knocked on the door, like, you know, just like he had before. And then he unlocked the door, stepped in, and everything was dark again. But then he was like, wait, skirt. Because he was quoted as saying, when I entered the room, this man was within 2 feet of the door on his knees and elbows, holding his head in his hand. I noticed blood on his hand, and then I turned the light on, placed the telephone receiver back on the hook, looked around, saw blood on the walls, on the bed, and in the bathroom. This frightened me, and I immediately left the room and went downstairs.
Was he alive holding his head?
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to fucking just leave the poor man like that?
Right.
Pick the phone up and call Dolores.
Delilah, but yes. But I love how he was like, sorry, it's a little bloody, but gotta make sure Delilah's not mad at
mm-hmm.
me. So he, you know, runs and they call the police and everything. So they arrive on the scene and also a doctor comes. Well, he looks Roland over and he says that his hands and ankles were tied together with the tight cord. And he said that same cord had been used to strangle him at some point, like before it was a cord, like wrapped around his legs and arms, like, you know, fucking multi-use over here. Roland also had a lot of bruises on his hands and then like some deep cuts. So, I mean, he's in bad fucking shape. And the detectives are doing what they need to do. And they're like, hey, do you remember who came in? Do you remember who did this? What happened? And Roland is in and out of consciousness. And he just kind of quietly told them, nobody
did what? It. Mm-hmm.
He said that what happened was that he slipped and hit his head on the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the bathtub fucking hogtied your ass? No,
exactly.
It didn't.
Exactly. Like, what in the nightmare on Elm Street is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So right after he's like, you know, like, hit my head on the bathtub, it's all cool, he then slipped into being unconscious again. He's taken to a hospital, and so the detectives are like, all right, let's go check that room then. So when they get back to that room, it, like, really had no evidence, you know? And they were just kind of, like, going over again. And the doctor had said that all the blood that was dried everywhere and stuff, the act probably happened, like, 7 hours before the police had been called or anything. And it could have been at a meeting around 3 to 4 a.m. The only clues that they could find were an unlit cigarette, a safety pin, and a hairpin, and a clothing label that's from a necktie, you know. And so, I mean, like, that was about it.
Yeah, well, he had no luggage.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then there was an unopened bottle of diluted sulfuric acid. And in the sink, there was cups that were glass that had been kind of, like, shattered.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that that might be why he had, like, cuts on his face and stuff. Mm. And the only thing that was like, okay. But the technology wasn't there yet, I don't think. But it was, they had some fingerprints that was on the telephone. And there were, like, 4 small fingerprints. So it looked to be a woman's hand.
Well, and that's back in the day, too, when they had to compare fingerprints, like,
mm-hmm.
painstakingly,
ugh.
Like, one person flipping through.
Yes. Whew. Well, old Roland, you know, he's basically in a coma. He's not doing well, though. And come to find out that his left lung had been punctured. And then one of the wounds on his chest was interfering. And so it was basically collapsing his lung. Mm. And at midnight, he passed away in that hospital. And with that, took a lot of those secrets and, like, things that could have helped with him. Like, yeah. You know, there were no clues. Not like he was like, ha, 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 got one on you. But yeah, it's just like, fuck. Who did this? Yeah. Well, on that Saturday, the Kansas City Journal Post, they ran the story about the hotel, the President Hotel mystery front page. And they just were trying to find out, like, does anyone know this person? Mm-hmm. Like, because Roland T. Owen wasn't his name.
Right.
But they didn't get any leads. And on Monday, January 7th, they decided to do a public viewing of his body.
Oh, shit.
In hopes to have someone identify him. Well, within that week that he was basically on display for everyone, around 300 people came by, but, like, no one was really able to help.
Yeah, because they were all looky-loos.
Mm-hmm. Well, detectives doing some detective work found out that he did stay at that other hotel, and it was under the name of Eugene K. Scott. Again, from California. They, you know, beep, boop, 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 boop to the LAPD, but they're like, nope, we don't know that person, you know? So it's like, what the fuck? I mean, days, weeks turned into months, and they had nothing.
They didn't even know who the victim was.
Right. And some people did reach out, and they're like, hey, that's so-and-so, that's whatever, but, like, nothing ever panned out like that. And so by March, they had kind of decided, let's just bury him in an unmarked grave, mm-hmm. you know, because what the hell? And there's this weird thing where the Rock Floral Company, they received this strange call, and it was a man who ordered 13 roses, and it was to be delivered during the service. And he was like, I'm calling on behalf of my sister, and I'll send $5 through, you know, like, basically PayPal, but...
like Western Union.
Yeah. You know, and, like, some special delivery things to cover the cost, like, whatevs. Well, when the flowers came, it had an envelope with it and handwriting, and inside was the money, a small clip of a card, and, like, handwriting, and it said, Love Forever, Louise. Well, then fast forward, and there's this one lady who is like, okay, no, I know who this person is. And her name's Ruby Ogletree, and she's from Birmingham, Alabama, and her son was kind of going to go around the country and, you know, whatever, and she had been in contact with him regularly, but then kind of slowed because, I mean, he's doing stuff and, mm-hmm. you know, all the things. Traveling the country before, you know, he was calling her all the time and stuff. But then he's doing his own thing, doesn't call her every night, all of the things. In November of 1936, Ruby was shown an article and she was like, oh, fuck, this is my son. Like, he was beaten to death, basically, in this hotel room. She was able to tell how he got his scar, like, mm-hmm. all of the things. But as you say, here's the thing. Roland was described as being 20 to 35 years old, and Artemis was only 17 years old.
What?
Yeah.
Well, 20 to 35 is quite an age range.
It is.
And, I mean, honestly, some 17-year-olds look 20.
But not usually back then.
Yeah, but a 20-year-old certainly does not look 35, though,
either. No, true.
So that's such a huge age span. Like,
yeah.
With as big of an age span as that is, it's reasonable to assume that he could have been 17.
True. See, this is why we have you, Carrie. Spitting that knowledge. So where he was buried, his name was changed from Roland T. Owen to Artemis Ogletree. But that's all they had to go on. And they had to kind of take her word for it because the body's been buried and stuff. So they'd have to exhume it. And mm-hmm. like, who's got money for that?
Not me.
And Ruby, this Artemis's mother, you know, she had been writing with him and stuff. Well, he started typing letters to her afterward. And it's like, why are you typing? Because, like, you have a hard enough time, like, reading and writing, like, but you're, like, typing up using fucking Grammarly.
Well, because somebody has already killed him and stolen his identity, and now they the ones, they got.
Uh-huh. And it's not all wrapped up in a pretty bow like yours is, because the mystery of the killing in room 1046 has never been solved.
Well, that's fucked up.
I know. I'm so sorry.
What the fuck?
And they... No one really has a good idea on what it is, but they said it could have been gang-related, and, like, he knew, like, someone would easily be able to take him out if he was on a side street or whatever, and or, like, low, you know, so he wanted to be up high, so he knew he was in danger.
But it's weird that he said that nobody did it to him, so is it because maybe it is, like, mafiosa-type thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's 1936. Is it something like that? And so he's like... Fucking, I'm not going out as a snitch.
Right.
But it's weird that there was like a, you said there was like a woman's fingerprints and stuff, and that there was like, the neighbor heard the talking.
Yeah.
So I almost wonder, like, something you said, I can't even remember what it was, but something that you said made me go, oh, I got this figured out. This person has dissociative identity disorder, which used to be known as multiple personalities, and... Some of the personality, like one of the personalities is a woman, maybe, and one of the personalities is Dawn, maybe one of, you know what I mean? And so maybe the woman personality is who killed, because I can't remember, but like, I think that like studies actually show on MRI the changes in the brain when they change, like as the personality switches to someone else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, I guess you couldn't change a woman's to a woman's fingerprints, but also kind of how'd you know?
Exactly.
It's well, also, like, it's 1936. Like, you weren't that sophisticated with fingerprinting.
Right. Well, and also, so they say, like, the mafia related or whatever, but it could be a love affair. And they said it could be, like, him on a female, and she found out, that female, and was pissed. Or... It could have been like a lover meetup with him and Dawn, because it's 1935 and
true.
And so, you know, I mean, you couldn't just be.
Yeah. And it is so true. And because they were kind of arguing. So there's some tension because he's like, no, I don't want to go out to eat. Just come here because I don't want to be seen.
Yes. And it could have been that that was his wife and she found that he was cheating on her with a guy or something. You know, like you never know. And then it was like.
And he was not going to say, because one, he wants to protect his wife, because two, he also doesn't want his secret coming out.
Exactly.
Man, I just, either way, someone feeling like they have to live a lie, they have to live this secret aside from who they are, crushes my soul.
Same.
I cannot imagine living like that. No. And it, I don't want that for anyone. And
me
it,
either.
It just breaks my heart.
Yeah. I know, I try to be so accepting and loving because I know others aren't. And it's like, I just want them to know that there's someone out there.
Right.
And like, I think we try to do that with the podcast and stuff too. Yes,
absolutely. You want to be that safe space for someone.
Yeah.
Because they maybe can't find it in who they should be able to find it in.
Yeah. That's another thing that I love about our group. I know we talk about it all the time, but... We really are a creepster family, and it helps me during the day.
You know, kind of along those lines of being who you are, and if this guy, whomever he was, couldn't be who he is, was, wanted to be, all the things, because he was gay, and he couldn't be because it was 1930, whatever. And maybe there is someone listening right now who feels like they can't be who that they who they want to be. And they're like, God, and it's 2000, whatever year it is.
19.
There is an APC LGBTQIA Facebook group that is also very supportive. And
yes.
So if you want to join that, please do, because it's a great safe space to ask questions.
I was about to say, like, even if you're an ally.
And you don't understand something or you're like, I need to know how to handle this situation or.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know,
yeah,
join the group because it's pretty amazing too.
Yeah. And like she said, it's safe to ask questions because these people know that you're coming from a place of love and like you want to understand, you know, and mm-hmm. it's not like, you know, you being a internet troll being like, what about this?
Yes.
You know, it's like, no, like, hey, I have a family member and I don't know how to approach this or to let them know that it's okay. Or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, whatever. Because words are fucking hard.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're talking about this that might not be accepted in your family or whatever. You know what I mean? And you don't want to rock the boat and be like, I'm here for you, like, at the table or whatever. You know what I mean? Anyway.
That was a tangent, but if you want to join, join.
Yes.
If you don't, don't. Well, that was a good story, even though it didn't have a fucking ending.
I know. But it's just like one of those mysterious things, like, which probably, you know, like if it was now, it would have been solved.
But also, like, what are all those other players about? Like, what do they mean?
Yeah, because it's like that random guy who saw this guy running, like, halfway dressed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Not for the weather. Why is he running? Where's he going? Where did he just come from?
Yeah. And like, where did he take the taxi to? Or mm-hmm. why did he not know what a taxi looked like? Like, I don't know. It was just like all of these things. And then that lady that was beside Roland heard arguing and everything from the man and the woman. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. And it's just like, what the fuck? And he was, like, brutally attacked.
This is so crazy. Wow. Well, I did like the story. I just like, like you said, a pretty little bow on the end. I don't mm-hmm. want to have to question.
I know.
But it's also really fun to question.
I know. Well, and we go off on tangents, and it leads into...
who knows what.
Yeah.
Well, as always, let us know what y'all think about the episode, and what do you think happened mm-hmm. to Roland / Aristocrat or whatever his other name was. What was it? Artemis. Whatever. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.